from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. In this hour of Forum, our digital afterlives. What happens to our online existence once we die? Our photos, tweets, Facebook pages, and professional profiles, what becomes of them? Our web presence can live on long after we do, and now services are springing up to help us think about that legacy before we're gone, to implement our wishes after we die. We'll talk with the author of an upcoming New York Times article examining the question, and we'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. Well, here's a question you might not think about much. What happens to the online you after you die? Facebook pages, Flickr photos, LinkedIn profiles, and on and on and on. We share them, of course, widely when we're alive with friends and colleagues and strangers, but after we're dead, what will friends and family do with them, if anything? Well, author Rob Walker writes about this in Sunday's New York Times Magazine in a cover story titled Cyberspace When You're Dead, and he joins us now from Savannah, Georgia. Rob Walker, good to have you with us. And are you there? Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
yes.
Good. Very, very good.
Thanks for having me, Scott. Yeah. I'm happy to be here.
You bet. First question. Your story begins with a guy named, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Tonies, who mm-hmm. died suddenly at the age of 34 in Kansas City in 2009. Tell us about him.
Well, he was a writer. He'd grown up in the Kansas City area. As a sort of day job, he did things like he worked at Starbucks and answered the phone at a small marketing agency and things like that, just sort of workaday jobs. But he was also an aspiring writer and a published writer, but just a sort of small press writer with a small but really devoted kind of following. And he was also a very active user of social media of all kinds. He blogged quite a bit. His blog was called Post-Human Blues. He was very active on it. He was a very active user of Twitter. And he made a lot of online friends that way, people all over the place who became, you know, a really, really good legitimate friendship. Some of them he met in real life. Some of them he didn't. No one was expecting his passing to happen. He had essentially undiagnosed heart condition. And the news, as it were, got out by way
of... The news being that he died suddenly of
that he had passed away. And if you basically his blog is still there, and if you look at the last post and start reading the comments, you'll see someone asking, "Hey, how come you're not posting lately?" And then, you know, a few more things like that, and then someone coming on and saying, "Okay, well, we've learned that Mac Tonies passed away." And then the comment section of the blog transforms into this kind of amazing series of hundreds of, you know, tributes and memories and people communicating with each other who were his online friends, basically. And it becomes a sort of de facto memorial site to him kind of in real time.
And besides those, you know, virtual friends, or mostly virtual friends that he'd met online, he also had a real family. How did they deal with that cyber legacy, if you will? How did it affect
them?
Well,
his parents were, to put it mildly, not big computer people. In fact, they didn't even own a computer. He would show them his online writing from time to time, but that involved him literally bringing over the laptop and opening it and putting it in front of them. So they didn't know what to make of this at first, and someone sort of had to tell them what was going on. And while they were concerned about how to get the word out to his, you know, his publisher and his various collaborators here and there, those people had basically already learned about it through the site. And this other sort of form of community was going on there. And interestingly, they ended up intersecting because a lot of those people ended up becoming friends with the parents. The parents have since they inherited their son's computer, have gotten very computer literate. And his mother, Dana, a very sweet woman in Independence, is actually in the process of reading his entire blog, you know, day by day. I think she has 1 year left to go of reading and kind of having this experience of you know, meeting this other side of her son.
And I imagine that's will become an increasingly common thing where family members just learn about this person that they thought they knew and they did know, but that there's a whole other online aspect to them that they didn't know and might not have known if they didn't get access to what they were doing online.
Yeah, clearly this is something that as a culture, I guess, we're still in a transitional phase on where different people use these tools in different ways and with different levels of enthusiasm and with different levels of using it to explore a different identity or to amplify an identity that's real. I remember when I was talking to Dana Tonies the first time, I was a little nervous about asking, but she told me she had been reading through the blog, like, did you find it, you know, was it the same son that you knew that you were reading on this thing? And in her case, she said absolutely. She could sort of hear his voice when she was reading it. So that's a happy outcome in that case.
To what extent are people, meaning users of sites like Facebook, thinking about this kind of thing?
I think not very much at all. And I think that one of the things, even though we've had the internet in our lives now for a pretty long time, there's still something about the way we use it that I think feels very fleeting and very ephemeral and very, I don't want to say trivial, but it seems more sometimes closer to real-time communication than to, you know, legacy. You don't think about necessarily your status updates on Facebook as being in some way equivalent to, you know, a journal that you might want to leave behind. So, you know, it's just something that I think comes into people's lives either through some story in the media or through some personal acquaintance with it. And the most common way is, you know, someone, a Facebook friend dying. You hear these stories of, you know, someone passing away, but no one has changed the profile so that it'll do that thing where Facebook will say, "Hey, you haven't communicated with this person lately. Why don't you send them a message?" And it's
raise a question of, you know, how are these companies, these social media companies, dealing with this question, if at all?
Sort of incrementally, and the policies are really different for each company, and it's not something that they spend a huge amount of time. I mean, Facebook has a policy. There is a way that you can survivor can have a deceased loved one's profile put into, I believe they call it memorial mode or tribute mode or something like that. But even though they've had that policy in place for quite some time, a lot of people clearly don't even know about it.
How would you go about it if you were a family member? I mean, you'd have
In the case of, it's different with every company, but in the case of Facebook, they have if you dig deep into their, you know, how-to guides, you'll find the instructions for how to get in touch with them, and they've got a process in place where you have to submit some kind of proof of death, or I think you can submit an obituary, which has led to, actually, I mean, it's not exactly fail-safe. I did read at least one account of someone who was pranked where they were not dead.
Yeah, exactly.
And a friend put them into memorial mode.
Friendship was dead, apparently.
Yeah, I think the friendship probably suffered. Maybe it wasn't much of a friendship to begin with.
And you point out, you quote a statistic in your article that, you know, there are 500 million or so Facebook users worldwide, and you quote the statistic that each day 375,000 Facebook users die.
So, well, I think that's a year, not every day.
Per year, I'm sorry. Per year, yes, per year.
Yeah. That would be really bad for
a whole lot of reasons. But no, this is going to be an increasingly common problem.
Yes. I mean, I think that it's something that sooner or later everyone will – it will touch your life. I mean, if you have 200 Facebook friends, which isn't a particularly high number, as you know, some people have thousands, it's just sort of inevitable. It's something that happens. People die. People die unexpectedly. And there's sort of no way of getting around that. So it will touch all of us at some point. And I should say that I think that statistic actually comes from Entrusted, and it was their best estimation. Facebook doesn't actually sort of release data along those lines, even if they – I don't even know if they would have it.
Well, you mentioned Entrusted, which is one of the companies that is springing up to deal with this issue. And actually, we have with us here in the studio Nate Lustig, who is co-founder of Entrusted. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about your company and how it got started.
So we're a way for people to make a list of all their digital assets, so all your online accounts and computer files, and then say which ones you want deleted and then which ones you want transferred to family and friends after you die. And we came up with the idea after reading Thomas Friedman's The World is Flat. And he talks about a U.S. Marine named Justin Ellsworth who was killed in Iraq. And his family wanted access to his Yahoo email account so that they could get his pictures and have a little bit more to remember him by. And Yahoo said, no way. It's against our terms of service. So they took him to court. And after a 3 or 4 month court battle, a Michigan judge told Yahoo, you have to turn over all the contents of Justin's email account to his parents. And we were thinking, this is crazy. You shouldn't have to go to court to get access to digital assets. And then number two, these digital assets actually have real value, whether it's monetary value or sentimental value. And then number three, well, I might have some things that I don't want my parents to have access to when I die. So we looked around and we didn't find anyone trying to deal with the problem, and we started working on it.
So how does it work? I go to your website and I sign in, and what am I asked for? Do I have to pay anything?
We have a free version that allows you to put in all of your online accounts and say which account should be deleted and which should be transferred. And then you nominate someone we call a digital executor, and it's their job to let us know when you've died and then also help transfer and delete these accounts when you pass away.
And so that would include not just sentimental things, but also perhaps bank accounts, those kinds of things?
We actually don't try to deal with bank accounts because banks already do a really good job of making sure that the money gets transferred. So they're already included in traditional wills pretty well. We try to deal with the forgotten assets, so blogs, domain names, your family photos, things like that.
And is there a charge?
We have a premium version as well. So if you don't want your digital executor or your family to have to go and delete accounts that you wanted deleted, you can pay us $30 every year and we'll go in and delete the accounts you say you want deleted after you die.
And so in addition to just working with potential customers, are you also dealing with professionals like attorneys and estate planners, that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Estate planners can play a big role here, but so far they sort of are a little bit scared of digital assets. We've partnered with...
Why is that?
I think attorneys as a whole don't really... aren't all that interested in technology. They've got a process that's been in place. Writing wills and trusts hasn't changed much in even a couple hundred years. It's still basically the same process as it was back in England, back in the 1600s, 1700s. So attorneys are sort of not wanting to change very much. But we have partnered with 20 law firms around the country who now understand how to incorporate digital assets into wills and trusts.
Now, you and I just met. I don't know how old you are, but you don't look like you're more than 25 or 26. 25 years old. So what's a young guy like you doing thinking about something like this?
Well, when we read the story in The World is Flat, we were just blown away that there was nothing to deal with the problem. And we were just thinking, this is crazy. There shouldn't be something a family has to deal with after basically the toughest time of their life.
And Rob Walker, you said that a lot of people aren't thinking about this kind of thing. And I would think especially younger folks who tend really not to think about what happens after they're gone. Is that fair to say? Or is it because younger people tend to be bigger users of online sites like Facebook that, you know, maybe they are thinking about it?
I think that with younger people who I spoke to anyway, it was not something they were thinking about, but when you introduce the topic, they seem to get it really quickly because they take the heavy use of these services for granted. And, you know, their attitudes will differ. Some, I actually spoke to one of Nate's customers who was a very young guy who had, who uses the service and who had thought through these decisions about he wanted his Twitter account destroyed and he wanted some other things saved and the Flickr pictures and things like that. So, you know, in some ways, the younger people I spoke to were, once you got them focused on it, they were actually pretty articulate about what mattered to them and why, and they had opinions about it. Some other people you speak to, they just don't care about any of it. They just say, well, it doesn't matter. It's a bunch of, you know, it's just online stuff. It's not important.
Now, Nate, in looking at your site yesterday, there was a section for estate lawyers. It seemed to be like you were advising them in, you know, maybe not so many words, but almost exactly these words, saying how to make more money, how to get more business from this. And it just made me feel a little creepy to me that you were sort of using this mortality of folks online. We all, of course, we're all going to die, but it just seemed a little crass to me. Did you guys think about that at all when you were putting the site up?
Yeah, it's really difficult to deal with the issue of death, especially in the U.S. We tend to not want to talk about death. We tend to try to not plan for it. Even traditional wills, there's only 33% of Americans have traditional wills. So, yeah, we have to really make sure that we think about how to present it in a credible and good way. But estate planning attorneys already are dealing with the issue of death and writing traditional wills. So that's their business, and we have to help them out to basically do the digital stuff too.
Rob Walker, as you listen to Nate and as you've dug into this topic, what concerns, if any, do you have about the ethics of all of this?
Well, I mean, I think that for any business, you know, this is the country is what it is. And so, of course, if anyone sort of figures out, well, gee, there's kind of a big potential profit opportunity here, then people are going to kind of step in and try to figure out ways to do that. You know, I think that the concern for people, I don't know if I would characterize it as an ethical concern, but I think one of the challenges around these companies like Nate's is, and this is a business challenge for them, is sort of, well, how do I know you're going to be around for 50 years or something like that? And if I'm going to, you know, if I really do value these digital things, that there's a big promise being made there that, well, we really will take care of them. So, you know, there's potential concern there. But I think that by and large, the players that I've seen in this space are approaching it in a, you know, in the way that, as Nate said, they're sort of attaching themselves to an existing business. They're not coming out of nowhere with this stuff.
And of course, you know, it's the landscape online changes by the day, and certainly 5, 10, 15 years from now, no one knows what sites are going to be popular. We assume right. Facebook will be around, but we thought MySpace would be around a few years ago, and it's pretty much fading away. What complications does that raise for companies and for individuals who are thinking about this kind of thing, Rob?
Yeah, I think that this is something that, I mean, I know that when I went into this story, my initial point of view was, well, bits are forever. You know, anything made of bits one way or another is going to survive forever. But I was pretty much talked out of that point of view by people who are smarter about technology than I am. And notably, a guy who's written a lot about this is a guy named Dave Weiner, who has a site called Scripting News. And he's been on this issue for several years of what he calls future safing. He got interested in it because he was an inventor of RSS technology and wanted to protect the original specs and
code.
And
just describe what that is quickly.
That's just a way of reading blogs through a reader that sort of sorts the posts and meshes them all together and makes it easier to read. And it was a historic achievement, and he wanted those original specs to exist, and he's had actually a fairly difficult time because not just the services that face us, like Facebook or MySpace, change, but also the underlying technologies change, the kinds of servers that information is stored on and the way that it's stored. And it can be surprisingly unstable. And, you know, the big risk is just a big, broad, sweeping change of standards, which does happen. We've lost data from, you know, the 60s that was stored in different kinds of digital formats. So I think it's difficult to guess how stable all these bits will turn out to be, despite our assumptions.
That's Rob Walker. He is author of this Sunday's New York Times Sunday Magazine cover story called Cyberspace When You're Dead. He's joining us from Savannah, Georgia this morning. Also with us here in the studio is Nate Lustig. He's co-founder of Entrusted, one of the many companies springing up to help people deal with these kinds of digital assets or plan for dealing with them after they die. And we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts about this whole topic? What do you want to happen to your Facebook page or any other profiles or tweets or blogs that you have after you're gone? Do you care who sees them? Who do you want to see them? Give us a call, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org. And Rob Walker, there are a number of different companies, including Entrusted, that are profiled or at least mentioned in your article. And the one that you say is your very favorite is deathswitch.com. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, now DeathSwitch is not doing anything nearly as comprehensive as what as what Nate's company is doing, or some of the others, Legacy Locker and some of the others. But what DeathSwitch does is basically it's a way of sending out kind of a final note to, you know, electronic note of any sort to whoever you want that's triggered through their system, which their system sort of sends you an email on a regular basis to make sure you're alive, and through a bunch of fail safes determines that you have passed, and that at that point will send out this sort of last. And, you know, you can whatever, settle an old score or send someone a treasure map or whatever it is that's the last thing that you want to do. But I thought the creator of that service named David Eagleman, very interesting guy who also he sort of created the service to echo a short story that he'd written that sort of theorized a business like this. And he said, well, why don't I just actually build it? People will go looking for it when they read the short story. So you know, why don't I give them something that will be there?
You know, I think we've all had that experience of hitting the send button and then regretting it, you know, with an email that was a little too angry or whatever. Knowing that this thing is going to be sent after you die, I mean, it seems like that could really sort of up the emotion level, although I suppose you would be writing it, obviously, when you're still alive. But do you think it people don't have regrets after they die, but I wonder if this isn't setting people up for, you know, complicating those relationships, making people unhappy who loved them, you know, after they're gone.
Sure. I mean, you know, it's a digital version of something that people already do, which is sort of leave behind the letter, you know, to be opened only in the event of my death, kind of thing. It's a little bit, I mean, still to me, even now, it's a little bit kind of spooky to think about getting an email from someone who has passed away after the fact is a little bit spooky. But, you know, there have been actually instances of people who have done things like this. There was another soldier, actually, I can't remember his name right now, but who was a blogger also, and who had a final post prepared that he had told someone to post only in the event of his death. And unfortunately, he was killed in Diyala province, and you can sort of read his final thoughts. So it's kind of that tradition.
Yeah. One of the other companies you mentioned in the article is called Legacy Locker. Tell us about that one.
Legacy Locker is similar in many ways to Entrusted, and I think that they came about on parallel tracks, but in roughly the same time frame. I'm sure that Nate could tell you all the ways that Entrusted is better. But there's a third one also.
Digital Beyond, I think you mentioned.
Well, the Digital Beyond is more of an informational site. There's another site that's based out of Switzerland. They have all participated in. I guess it was in your area about a year ago. There was a digital death day where a number of the members of these companies and other scholars and interested parties got together and talked about this this issue.
And Nate, just quickly, we're going to take a break in a moment. But you know, what's your elevator pitch to somebody about why they should you know, sign up with a company like yours?
Well, if you think about all the different memories that you've created throughout your life. They're now digital. So, for example, when my grandmother passed away, my favorite memory from her was her recipe book and all of her slides from her travels. And now, if I were to die, all of my information would all be digital. And that's what we need to pass on to the next generation.
All right. Nate Lustig from Entrusted and Rob Walker, who's written the cover story of this Sunday's New York Times Magazine. It's called Cyberspace When You're Dead. And we'd love to hear from you. What about your online legacy? What do you want it to look like? And what, if anything, are you doing to help shape it now? 866-733-6786 is the number. 866-733-6786. Or, as always, you can email us your comments and questions, forum@kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer sitting in today for Michael Krasny. And this hour, we're talking about the digital afterlife. What happens to all of your online blogs and tweets and status updates, Facebook pages, LinkedIn profiles, all those things after you die? And our guests are Rob Walker. He's the author of the cover story in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine. It's called Cyberspace When You're Dead. And also joining me here in the studio, Nate Lustig. He's co-founder of the Entrusted site, which helps people plan for that moment when they're no longer around and their online presence is. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. We'd love to hear from you on this topic. 866-733-6786. Let's go to the phones right now. Judith is on the line in San Mateo. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. This is a very timely topic for me because I'm a widow and my husband died in August. And I've had a real dilemma of how long to keep his Facebook page up. Is it socially acceptable to take it down immediately, or should I keep it up for a year? And then the other challenge I faced was switching on my Facebook page from married to widowed. Mm. And that was a very traumatic change for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people know the significance of that tiny little click. Mm-hmm. From married to widowed.
Yeah,
and I'm wondering what your call or your panel has to say on that.
Yeah, first of all, condolences about your husband. Sorry to hear that. Did he know? Was he sick? Did he know he was going to die soon?
Well, my husband was semi-computer literate. He was very ill for a long time, but he did start a Facebook page and had connected with several people. He was in his 60s, I'm in my 60s, we're not young, but we were Facebook users, and every time I open up my Facebook page, I see him there as my friend, but I'm not sure. Hmm. How long do you keep a page up after someone has passed?
Hmm. That's a really, obviously, a very personal decision to make, and there's no right or wrong answer, but Rob Walker, what are your thoughts, and what have other families you've talked to said about this kind of thing?
Sure. Also want to say very sorry to hear of your loss. And I mean, I think that this is an example of exactly what I'm sort of most interested in about this topic, is that there is no protocol right now for this kind of thing. We're still sort of getting used to living this way. And I've had multiple conversations with multiple people who would all answer the question completely differently. Some like the idea of putting something in that memorial mode. Others don't like it at all for various reasons. There's sort of differing opinions about, well, if someone passes away, who you follow their Twitter feed, do you unfollow them? That, they're not, obviously not going to be tweeting anymore, but it also just sort of feels awful.
Yeah.
To do that.
It's kind of like pulling somebody's name out of the Rolodex or crossing their name off.
Sure.
The phone book.
Yeah. And it really sort of underscores the degree to which, while we kind of have this lighthearted attitude about, oh, all the stuff we're doing online, it really is an emotional trigger for a lot of people. It really is embedded in our daily lives. And these are hard decisions to make.
And that question, Judith, of changing your relationship status. And, I know people who've broken up with their partners, husbands, wives, whatever, and they also, worry about it, to think about it, and then when it happens, of course, it gets announced to all of their friends, and that generates
right.
A whole lot of email as well. What's your thinking about that, and when it would be appropriate, or if it's appropriate to do so? What are your concerns?
Oh, you're talking to me?
Yeah, to you, yeah.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what happened. My husband's only been gone 4 months, and when I realized my page still showed married, every time I'd open it, it would create a little bit of, it would deepen my grief. And when I saw that there was an option for widowed, it was a very difficult decision. And I even posted on my page, one click, changing from widowed to married, seemed very simple, but it had profound implications for me.
Yeah. And I assume you've been getting Facebook messages from friends of yours and your husband's since he died?
Well, I occasionally go back to his page, and people have not posted after. They posted initially, but no longer post. And I'm sure his friends also wonder, how long will this page be there? Because it's a constant reminder for them. I was unaware of the memorial status and will look into that. I think that's very helpful. But the picture is still there. I was posting through there, so it's a constant remembering of him.
Yeah,
and it can be positive and negative.
Yeah. Well, Judith, thanks for sharing that with us, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye.
Rob Walker, this is really kind of a frontier of estate planning and the afterlife. I mean, it's really something, obviously, that's just evolving as we speak.
Yes, and I think that, you know, in some ways you could consider that story as one of the kinds of things that people talk about when they say, well, that's why you should think this through and articulate somewhere to someone what you want to have happen to your profile or your blog or whatever it is. And there were cases that I came across where there was disagreement about whether or not to save a blog, and where there was one case that got talked about quite a bit online of a writer named Leslie Harpold, whose family elected not to continue the hosting fees and whatnot, and let her online presence, her most prominent online presence, go, and that was very upsetting to her online circle. But, you know, there was just no particular way for these two contingencies to kind of come to an agreement. And there was no way of knowing what she would have wanted.
Yeah.
Because she also had died unexpectedly and had not left any kind of, you know, directive.
Yeah. We're talking about what to do with your digital presence after you're gone. And we're talking with Rob Walker, who's written an article in this Sunday's New York Times, the cover story of the magazine called Cyberspace When You're Dead, and also Nate Lustig, who is co-founder of Entrusted, here with us in the studio. Give us a call at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Let's go to Berkeley now. Laura is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment. I'm a young mom. I have three children, and I never seem to print my digital photos anymore.
Uh-huh.
You know, I only send them to my grandmother, who doesn't have internet. So I really appreciate this topic because I think it's started me thinking along the lines of how am I going to save these things, like even my Facebook page, for my children in 20 or 30 years. You know, I don't know how much it will have changed into something different by then, but for them to look back at the same way that I look at old photo albums, which really won't exist in my house because I'm never printing my digital photos.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I like the idea of, you know, you guys should market this to mothers and fathers who want to memorialize their selves for their children and their children's lives as they grow up.
Mm. Yeah, I'm just curious. Have you dealt with the other part of your life, the paper your whatever it is you have, your possessions and things that scrapbooks, diaries, and those kinds of things, or have you just not dealt with any of it?
Well, the diaries are in the attic. I haven't journaled as much since I've had kids, actually. But from college and stuff, I just think it would be neat for them to look back on my life. You know, after I'm dead, not while I'm still alive,
yeah.
Maybe. But yeah, the diaries I still have. I feel sort of a loss. I only called in because just this morning, while my youngest is 3 months old, I was nursing him, and I looked at the older two kids' baby books and thought, oh, poor baby, he's not the third child, he won't have a baby book, you know, because I just haven't gotten my act together to get the photos and the book and all of that. And so, but yet he has way more digital imagery of himself than my older two kids do, who are 6 and 8 years old.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting because the youngest will have a lot of, I mean, my husband posts videos of him on Facebook all the time, and he's only 3 months old, you know? So it's interesting to think about needing to preserve that stuff for him when he's older.
Yeah.
In the digital format. But I'm thankful that something like that exists so that I will have that to sort of give to my children, because I've been feeling bad that I don't print out more photos to actually have a hard copy of
yeah.
them.
Well, don't,
you know?
Don't feel bad. Don't feel bad. Yeah. Laura, thanks so much for the call. Nate Lustig, how tough is it for people, you know, of your generation? Well, I'll have you speak for your whole generation here, to talk about these things.
It completely depends. It's what we found is that there's a certain sort of psychographic of people that's willing to plan for their death. It's pretty much the same from young to old. There's a certain type of people that always wants to be organized. And I think that it's just tough for anyone, no matter what their age, to think about their own mortality. Even when you're older, it's still tough. And that's what we found.
I've got an email here from Rich who writes, do you know if any of the photo websites offer a way to keep your photos online after your death? I have mine on Flickr and would like them preserved. Rob Walker, do you have any sense of that from your research?
Well, I am pretty sure, and Nate might know more about this than I do, but Flickr is owned by Yahoo, whose official policy I do not think has changed since that lawsuit that he mentioned. The only way you would be able to do that, depending on how many pictures you have, what happens on Flickr is you can have as many as you want if you have a pro account, which I think is $25 a year or something along those lines. And if your pro account lapses, basically all but, say, 200, I think, of those images sort of disappear.
Hmm.
They're technically still there. They can be restored if someone renews the pro account, but there's no way to renew a pro account if there's no one there renewing it and who knows your Yahoo password.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In the absence of that, and this actually was the case with Mac Tony's, who I mentioned earlier, his blog came through okay. A lot of the pictures on Flickr are essentially inaccessible. They might be on a server somewhere, but there's no particular way of getting at them.
So even if his family contacted Flickr and had a copy of the death certificate or whatever?
I believe that Yahoo's policy is that they do not, under any circumstances, turn over passwords to that differs from company to company, and I would advise. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, and I would check their terms of service to make sure. And again, Nate should correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I believe that that's the case with Yahoo.
Yeah, Yahoo is one of the companies that just says it's absolutely not. We won't turn over your password. And that's actually the question is actually the perfect use case for a service like Entrusted, because the only way that your family is going to be able to keep paying your bill and keep all of those photos around is if they have your username and password. And that it's sort of a stopgap. In the future, we're trying to partner with companies like the Flickrs of the world so that they can give you the option to be able to transfer that.
I don't know if you've begun working with companies like that, but how resistant are they? What are their concerns? Obviously, they don't want someone else to breach security of one of their customers.
We've partnered with 5 companies so far, and it depends on the company, but many of them like the idea because, for example, Flickr loses a paying customer. I know it sounds bad, but Flickr does lose a paying customer when someone passes away. And so many companies like the idea of being able to do a good thing for their customers and keep a revenue stream going. But their main concerns are, well, what if this goes to the son of someone when their will says it should go to their wife?
Mm-hmm.
So those are the big hangups that companies have right now.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. 866-733-6786. And Rich is on the line from Sacramento. Hi, Rich.
Hi. I've got an interesting point of view. I actually am a moderator on a website that deals with photographers and models, and many of them are nude or semi-nude images. And frankly, we have a real hard time when our members die because we want to respect their wishes. We want to respect the wishes of the family and the community. And often without a clear way to go, it makes it difficult to decide what to do with it.
Hmm. Any thoughts about that? Rob Walker, did you come across that kind of a situation?
I didn't come across that exact situation, but a scenario that I talked about with a number of people, but no one seems to have any concrete, I think it's too soon to sort of say, but where this kind of thing could come up again is, we just finished talking a lot about childhood pictures. Now, I don't know about you, but a lot of my Facebook friends literally start posting pictures of their children from about, day 3 or something.
At
some point, those kids are going to grow up. And there becomes an interesting question of, say, you're posting a picture of your, isn't it cute that my son has his hat on backwards when he's 4 or whatever. Now, someday that 4-year-old will grow up and say, I would really rather that picture not exist in cyberspace in perpetuity. Whose call is that? I think that that's a variation on what I believe the caller is saying, that sort of whose decision is this? Is it the person in the image? Is it the person who took the image? And obviously, there are cases where that gets worked out legally. In other cases, like a family photo, it's a little bit ambiguous. And I think we're too soon to figure all that out. But I think at some point it's going to be something that people grapple with quite a bit.
Nate Lustig, Rich's comment, he sounds like the kind of customer that you'd be looking for.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what our partner program does. We help you make a policy where you can basically ask your users, if something were to happen to you, what do you want to have happen?
All right, Rich, thanks so much for the call. Let's go now to Petaluma, and Bob is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Bob, and I'm an estate planning attorney. And I want to say that you folks have come up with a brilliant idea. I'm just upset that I didn't think of it first. Because I'm driving, I'm unable to take any notes. But I'm assuming that if I Google and trust it, that I'll be able to come up with some information that will allow me to present this to my clients. I think it's a wonderful concept, and quite frankly, it had never even occurred to me, but I just had my computer redone because it crashed, and I had tons and tons of passwords and other information that fortunately I had written down elsewhere, but I was thinking, you know, when somebody goes, they have many, many accounts that no one is ever going to be able to access again.
Yeah, thanks. We actually, if you go to EntrustIt, we have a whole packet of information for attorneys so that they can learn how to incorporate planning for digital assets into their current practice. And just as a note, Jesse, my co-founder Jesse and I were some of the first two people in North America that had our digital assets added into our own will. So it's actually fairly easy, and if you go to the site and download some of our information, we can help you out.
Bob, as you think about it, and I realize you're driving, and it just occurred to you, but what are some of the issues that come up for you, legal issues, ethical issues, that kind of thing?
Well, the legal issues revolve around titled items, and those are going to be handled either by a trust or a will, because you can't just say that offhand that I want to leave X to somebody if it's a titled item. Like if, say, you have a copyright or something like that, you need to do something fairly formal. But for the access to, say, a Yahoo account or something like that, which needs the password, that allows people to get in easily. I can see the problem that Yahoo has, for instance, in that there may be some liability attached to a third party who was not a party to the original contract coming in and doing something on that Yahoo account. So you need to be very careful about making sure you address all the formalities in transferring ownership or title to any of these issues.
And Nate, are those the kinds of issues your company is beginning to think about?
Yeah, and it's actually issues that the law is starting to think about. There was a law that just passed about 2 months ago in Oklahoma. It was Oklahoma Bill 2800. And in Oklahoma, the executor now has the ability to access, transfer, or delete social media accounts. And we've been pushing for a similar law in Wisconsin. And I think that similar laws are going to start to be passed all across the country, because it's such a need.
Bob, thanks for the call. And by the way, if you do Google EntrustIt, it's EntrustIt, so EntrustIt.com. Thanks so much for the call. Let's go now to the Santa Cruz Mountains, and Marina is calling. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I wanted to talk a little bit about intentional digital legacy. I happen to be a co-founder of an online service called Hospice Journey, and it's all about people creating their digital legacy, knowing that they're going to die. So it can be them or their friends and family or a loved ones creating it for them. And so people can create photo albums, they can reflect on their life and express their last goodbyes. Forgiveness really is digital legacy in preparation of death. So I just wanted to see what you guys think about this kind of service and how valuable it is in the light of the whole discussion.
And so you're dealing with folks who are in, did you say hospice?
They don't have to be hospice. I think hospice is it's more like a philosophy. It's
End of life.
It's end of life philosophy and preparation, the emotional preparation, kind of a letting go part before you're gonna die. So it's like the moment of death is not so shocking, and also the whole phase before death. is more cathartic.
Yeah. And Rob Walker, I could imagine something like that would be very, you know, therapeutic and give folks who are dying the sense that, you know, their memories will live on in ways they can shape.
Sure, of course. And there are a number of examples of things like that, I certainly came across more than one example of people who they weren't using that service necessarily, but they were, say, doing a blog that was about, they'd had a diagnosis, and so they were blogging about their treatment and it was how it was going to go. And I'm assuming that it's incredibly therapeutic for them and on some level for family and loved ones as well. And then there is actually a whole other category of businesses in this space of memorial-oriented sites where people can build pages that are about a lost loved one and leave comments there and so on. So it's there's a lot going on out there already that's in that kind of emotional space around those situations.
All right, Marina, thanks so much for the call. We have an email in that regard. Jennifer writes from Oakland, I have a friend who passed away suddenly a few months ago. His Facebook page turned into a spontaneous memorial where friends posted photos of him, wrote about their memories, paid their respects, and so on. It was a very touching outpouring of emotion. I can't help wondering, though, as he was not married, what will happen to his Facebook page and such? Will it live on forever? Does Facebook drop pages if they're inactive after a certain period of time? Rob?
No, they don't. I don't know if anything will live. It depends on the future of Facebook, but that page will just be as it is until someone... does something about it, which could be, never.
Could be never. All right, back to the phones. Kevin is calling from San Francisco. Good morning.
Hey, this show is very timely. A dear friend of mine, former roommate, died unbeknownst to me, and I had emailed him and gotten no response when I was visiting the area in New York and never heard from him. Until his wife happened to call me and mentioned that, we didn't see that because no one knows his passwords.
Hmm.
So if folks aren't going to do a higher tech solution like your guests are suggesting, this is a good reminder to me and to the listeners to collect all your passwords and websites that you access. A lot of us who were early into computing just did this regularly on a piece of paper. But as, you know, the net has developed and the Facebooks and MySpaces and every other site has come up that require passwords, we tend to let these things slip by the wayside. So it's a reminder to just write down, or I use an Excel spreadsheet, and put down websites and the passwords you use and stick it in the bottom of your desk drawer there where, you know, should God forbid something should happen, someone will find it.
Well, I wonder, that sort of, is leaving it to fate in a way. Have you thought about doing something more proactive to create a systematic way of letting people know what those things are, like Entrusted or something like that?
Well, actually, for myself, I would rather my websites disappeared. I wouldn't want to burden anyone with looking through my computer should that happen. But I can understand, having a permanent, like, Facebook site always up there for people to be reminded of you. You know, that might be a nice little thing.
Yeah.
But I would, in the event that I died, I live alone, someone would look through my top dress drawer and just simply find the paper with all these things on it, passwords, etc.
Yeah.
Where people keep their important papers would be the obvious place to keep it.
Right. All right, Kevin, thanks for the call. Just a few minutes left here. Let's try to sneak in at least one more call. Allison in Palo Alto, welcome.
Yes, hi. This is Allison. The reason why I'm calling is because I had a friend of mine who passed away last year in a car accident, and it did become an instantaneous memorial, like the other woman mentioned.
Uh-huh.
But more recently, I've been receiving a lot of spam from her account, and it's really a horrible thing is to keep seeing these emails that are spam coming from her account. So I worry about keeping these things in perpetuity. When that could happen. So what would happen with Entrusted and other people? What would you recommend in that case?
Nate, any ideas?
Yeah, we've seen lots and lots of examples, and it's actually called ghosting, where identity thieves will go in and look for accounts of dead people to try to hack them. And in some cases, they send porn links to all of their friends, and it's just horrible, for a horrible reminder for people. And we think that it's one way to avoid that is to make sure that you have your passwords and usernames given to someone you trust, so that they can either shut the account down or make sure that it stays active so that someone doesn't gain access.
All right, Allison, thanks for the call. Rob Walker, now that you've written this article, has it gotten you to start thinking about these things and, you know, more importantly, doing something about them?
Well, I confess in the piece that despite having done all this research, it doesn't make me any more. I'm the same as anybody else. I'm not that anxious to sort of sit down and spend a weekend, you know, kind of contemplating all the things that need to be done when I'm dead. What it has done, I guess, for me is it on some level has made me rethink the way that I guess I've rethought digital life a little bit, in sort of trying to think about maybe not creating quite as many things online that are, you know, that I wouldn't want to be there, you know, superfluous things, and making sure that, say, with pictures and so on, that I'm not depending on the scenario where every meaningful picture to me is sitting on a server somewhere that might not be accessible. But, you know, at some point, I keep telling myself at some point next weekend. So next weekend, I'm going to get on top of that.
Yeah, next weekend. Nate Lustig, what about you? To what extent has this gotten you thinking about it beyond your own business? I mean,
yeah, it's definitely changed the way I think a little bit, because we deal with death every single day. I think it's just on a personal level, it's made me sort of change the way I think in terms of living each day as if it's my last, doing the things that I want to do. Not so much in terms of the planning side of it, but just when you are dealing with it all the time, you realize how few days we actually do have on this earth.
All right. Nate Lustig, co-founder of Entrustit, thanks to you for being here this hour. Thanks also to Rob Walker, who joined us from Savannah, Georgia this morning. You can read his article in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine. It's the cover article called Cyberspace When You're Dead. Rob Walker, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell, with production assistance from Patricia Yallen and Christina Russo. Our intern is Suki Lewis. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.